If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the Osiris Podcasting family, a growing community of music and culture podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and music. For more, visit osirispod.com. The show starts now.
The junk mail keeps pouring in with a couple of nasty bills mixed in. So you have to go through it all again to make sure you don't miss them. Out on the road, it's the same as before. It's like selling poetry door to door. But the girls are not your age anymore, so you can't even kiss them. Hey, hey, the gang's all here, we're sort of surviving another year. So pour out a bowl for the dead and dear, keep the spirits alive, we're sort of surviving, we're sort of surviving. Calm the nerves is a couple of pounds on your boyish curves. Besides, nobody trusts a man that swerves, so you better just skip him. I get on stage, it's a pretty good crowd, but a couple of ladies are whispering loud. It takes more than that for me to be cowed, but I wish they'd just listen. Hey, hey, the gang's all here, we're sort of surviving another year. So pour out a bowl for the dead and dear, and keep their spirits alive. Sort of surviving another year. So pour out a pull for the dead and dear, and keep their spirits alive. So pour out a pull for the dead and dear, and keep their spirits alive. Sort of surviving, sort of surviving.
You've been listening to Tim Bloom and the title track from his new record, Sort of Surviving, due out March 29th, 2019. Tim's full-time gig, as I'm sure you're aware, is being part of the awesome band, The Mother Hips. So when I heard he was releasing a solo record, his seventh if you count his ballpoint bird stuff, we were eager to get him on. This record has a very specific country feel, which made us even more curious about the project. Our conversation started when I asked him about playing acoustic guitar on this and previous solo records, a departure from how we generally think of Tim Bloom, the musician.
I play a lot of acoustic guitar generally, not in the Mother Hips, but and to be fair, the Mother Hips is my highest profile kind of, you know, thing that I do. But I've spent a lot of time. I have Sort of Surviving is, I believe, my sixth solo record, and many of my solo records are more acoustic based, and that's kind of a natural response to being in a rock and roll band for you know, 28 years and enjoying so much other kind of music that isn't just like loud rock and roll. So Greg Lozano, who's my partner in the Mother Hips, he and I both have gone outside the Mother Hips and made sort of softer sounding records for many years, just sort of because we need to, we want to. That's part of our, that's part of who we are. And you know, going back to sort of surviving, me just trying to continue that tradition of a tradition that's really strong in country music, but just storytelling, you know, first person kind of intimate storytelling. And I just enjoy that form so much, and it was always so fun to write in that style. And so it's kind of easier in some ways, oddly, for me.
Is it a matter of you just picking up an acoustic and strumming out melodies and parts, or is it a matter of you actually putting pen to paper to write the lyrics for some of these songs and then sitting down with an acoustic and sort of putting it together?
Yeah, kind of more the latter. I sadly don't really put very many pens to very much paper anymore these days.
That's fair.
I wish I did, but it's just the iPhone notes application is just so easy. It's always there. If I'm driving in the car, I can just, you know, say something into my phone and essentially write down ideas and concepts and lyrics. So I have just thousands of memos in my phone, and I feel like they're pretty safe because they go into the cloud or whatever, and it feels a little bit more secure than writing them down in a notebook and possibly losing that notebook. But I think, you know, to answer your question more directly, what I do is I'll come up with an idea, either like a chorus that I think will be a cool concept, or just an idea for a song, a character maybe for that would be good to listen to in a song or as a story. And I usually will start with the words for the most part, but I usually have a time signature in mind. Well, you kind of have to have a time signature in mind in order to write the words properly. And you know, especially in this kind of more country music realm, it's such a standard form. There's not... You, for the most part, you're just kind of, the chords are just whatever. Like the melody that you can lay on top of those chords is far more important than the actual chords. There's usually three, maybe four chords in a song. And, you know, most country songs sound kind of similar. There's probably like four or five different like archetypes. But I like working with frame. I like sort of having a form, a standard form to work with. I think it's fun.
What made you decide to call on Dave Schools to produce this record?
We had just sort of become friends randomly over the years. The Mother Hips opened for Widespread Panic many years ago, but we didn't really get to hang out too much because they were like rock stars and we were just like, and they still are.
Right.
Nothing has changed. But, you know, we were sort of on each other's radar, and I mean, obviously I knew Widespread Panic, but Dave is such a voracious listener of music. He's just so aware of so many different acts, and it seems like he knows every band that is going on. He just pays attention. He listens to a lot of music. And so he sort of, I guess, you know, just sort of remembered the Mother Hips from when we played together. And, you know, I wouldn't have thought that, but we were standing, you know, I think his band and my band were in the security line at the Denver airport. It's like this huge room with this like long back and forth lines. And so you keep passing the same people for like the whole time you're in line. And Dave and I are both pretty tall. So we both kind of stood out. We saw each other across this like sea of people. And we're like, whoa, hey. And as, every time we would sort of like pass each other in the line, we would sort of catch up and talk. And it went on for quite a while that morning. And so we kind of got to know each other a little bit. And then he ended up moving out to the West Coast, Bay, northern, like North Bay, they call it, here north of the city, which is where I live also. he's, you know, got pretty involved in the scene around here. And we always just sort of said to each other every time we would see each other out somewhere, just like, we have to think of an idea that we need to figure out some way that we can do a project together, just because we never have. And we kind of kicked that around for a few months, a year maybe. And then this opportunity came where I was talking with the head of my record label, and his Dave Schools, his name came up to be the producer. And I asked him if he would do it, and he was into it. And so then we set about, you know, coming up with a concept for the record.
Was it difficult for you to come up with a concept for the record? Because in many ways, without getting too involved in personal life, but in many ways, this is a response to some of the songs, at least, are a response to Nikki Bloom's record and her heartache. And so I'm curious if that was the spawning, or if you had something like this in mind before Nikki's record came out.
Yeah, to be honest, I've never heard Nikki's record. I just don't feel like I want to listen to it. I support what she's doing all the way, and I'm glad she's doing really well, and I have nothing but goodwill towards her and her pursuit of her career. But I have not listened to her record, and so I can't say that any of it is a response to that record, because not. But you know, I recorded this record, been over a year ago since I recorded it, and you know, obviously the songs were written through the course of the previous year, so all that writing stuff happened before Nikki probably even wrote her record. I'm not sure, but you know, there was a few songs that I wrote and recorded that kind of touched on some of those interpersonal, you know, relationship issues, and everyone thought that it was better to leave them off the record. So I kind of like went out there, and then it was generally thought that it was better to kind of close back.
Well, there are 10 songs on the record. 3 of them are covers, and we'll get to those in just a bit. 7 of them are originals. The title track, Sort of Surviving, kind of does speak to where you are or where you were in life as much as the other songs do. I'm curious, though, about the sense of humor in the writing, and probably not something that we get to see a ton of, but it's definitely evident on this record, and perhaps the archetypes and the kinds of songs that you made lend themselves to more of that kind of humor, whether it's, you know, Jesus Saves a Singer or Where I Parked My Mind. There are certainly anecdotes and other things that are a little bit more humorous, shall we say, than other writing. That just comes naturally to you. I mean, that's just, you know, who you are as a person. And so you felt comfortable writing those songs and adding that element to the writing?
Absolutely. I mean, I love to laugh, and I love to be silly and to think of jokes. And I think I come off as sort of like a kind of a more serious person. I'm not really sure why that is, but I've heard that before.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's just like the shape of my face or something. I don't know. But, no, I've always been like, when I was a kid, I would always draw comics and make jokes and try to make puns and just stupid stuff like that. Anything to try to get through class. And there's, at least in my opinion, there's a lot of sort of humor and references that are ironic or sort of humorous in all of my writing, but I've figured out a long time ago that people just don't get it. I must bury it a little too deep or something like that, or the references are too obscure, because no one ever really seems to find the little like Easter eggs that I hide them too well or something. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just not as funny as I think I am.
Or it's possible that people just aren't looking for it as much as they are when it's, you know, you stripped down sort of being there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's true. It's like the eggs aren't hidden as much. Yeah, they're just sort of sitting in the grass instead of like buried in the sand dunes behind all the vines and grass and stuff.
You know, even though it is a country record, and even though there are, you know, we talked about different archetypes, there are, even on this record, different ways to accomplish the task. So, you know, Jesus Saves a Singer sort of has that honky-tonk feel, while No Way to Steer sort of has that real classic country ballad type thing going on. You really do spend a lot of time with the art form of country music. And I'm curious how you came to country music, because it's not something that, you know, we said off at the top, not something that somebody who grew up in LA and has lived in the Bay Area for so long naturally comes to.
No, I know. And I sort of, my exposure to country music when I was a kid growing up in Manhattan Beach, which is like, you know, southern Los Angeles County, right by the bush, and it was all Beach Boys back, you know, where I lived. And so I didn't really come across country music other than like Kenny Rogers
right.
on the radio, which I think is awesome. Still love it. In fact, I kind of tried to crack that code a little bit on a couple of the songs on the record as well, because that kind of storytelling thing. It was through listening to The Byrds and Sweetheart of the Rodeo. You know, it's the same old story, like so many. It's not a unique story, but it's kind of what happened. I heard some of those things and I was like, wow, this is really, I like this. Like, where did they, like, I think it was, I don't remember if it was, I think it was Graham Parsons singing it, but it was a cover of Sing Me Back Home, a Haggard song. And I liked it so much that I was thinking, God, did Graham Parsons write this song? So I kind of just looked into it and it was like, oh no, Merle Haggard. And of course I'd heard of Merle Haggard, but never checked it out. Bought a couple records and I was really into it. I just really liked it a lot. Still do. I mean, I guess, you know, just thinking it over as I'm talking to you, I had already been really into Johnny Cash, of course, when I think of it before that. But Johnny Cash almost like transcends genre in a way. Not really like, he's just like a personality more than he is like a country singer. I don't know. I don't really think of Johnny Cash as country music for some reason.
You had the opportunity to open for Johnny Cash, the Mother Hips did, but you also had a chance to, you recorded this record at the Cash Cabin Studios, but you had a chance to record a previous Mother Hips record early on at the Cash Cabin with Rick Rubin, who was doing work with Johnny and the American label. Did you have conversations with him about music, or was it more about, you know, we're hanging out at Johnny's place? And
we didn't have it, you know, I don't think many people like me get a chance to actually have a conversation with someone like him, but I did get to meet him a few times. And the label American Recordings, they kind of like set up this sort of like meeting for he and I to like talk, so he could kind of tell me about American Recordings. You know, it was kind of like a little thing that they set up, which it was really cool. So Johnny Cash was just talking to me about how, you know, why my band should sign with American Recordings and how they work and why it was a good idea. And he could have said anything to me and it would have worked. I mean, I was pretty thrilled.
This record, let's go back to the record for a sec. There are quote-unquote all-star band members on this record, including Jesse Acock, Jason Crosby, who you've collaborated with both as a songwriter and a performer numerous times, and then Gene Chrisman and David Rowe, who are the rhythm section on this record. And of course, authentically, you recorded it at the Cash Cabin Studios in Hendersonville, Tennessee. Who put the band together? Was it you, or was it Dave, or was it a combination?
No, it was Dave. It was Dave Schools. Dave Schools just he asked me, like, what should we do? And I said, why don't you just, you know, he had heard the songs, he'd heard the demos, and I just said, you know, he knows everyone, he knows so many people. And he'd worked at the Cash Cabin before with Todd Snyder, with Hardworking Americans, and he's just, you know, he's more of a Southern boy than I, you know, obviously he's from Georgia. So he kind of has spent a lot more time in Nashville than I ever had. So he kind of knew who would give us what we were looking for. We were looking for that old Nashville, you know, 70s Nashville sound. And Dave was able to just find some of those guys that are still around, that still play really well, that were actually there and actually helped generate that sound originally. And that was, it was amazing. It was so, so cool to just listen to them play. It was so simple and so quick, but it's just like, there it is. There's that sound. It's just there. You don't have to work for it.
I don't know, because I don't have liner notes for the record, but is there some pedal steel too on this record that isn't getting?
Yeah, yeah.
Who plays pedal? Is it you or is it somebody else?
No. Doug Jernigan is a really legendary country jazz pedal steel player from Nashville. And Jesse Acock plays some lap steel and kind of blends it in a little bit. But the pedal steel is all Doug Jernigan, who's he's incredibly talented.
Well, it's great that you got to obviously work with Jason, who you've worked with before. Was it a case of you guys went in and had a couple of days and it just all came together really quickly? Or did was this a laboring process with the group?
It was really fast, because when you hire guys like that, like every single person that was in that studio, including the engineer, Chuck Turner, they're just so good at it. They're so fast. And not that I'm any sort of expert on this, but in Nashville, they do like two takes and it's done. You don't mess around with that stuff. You wouldn't be in the studio unless you were able to look at the chart. You know, they make these charts, the Nashville numbers charts. And so everything they really need to know about the song is just written down, and they just look at the charts while they're playing. It goes really fast. Amazing.
And such talent, right? I mean, it's these people have been doing it for so long too, that it's just a matter of them being so good at their instrument and knowing the songs that they can just bang them out. And I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, they don't know the songs, but
right.
They know the form really well. And as I was saying, like, you know, there's not too much going on in these songs. It's that challenging for them. Once in a while, there'll be an expensive chord, as they say, but, for the most part, it's just real simple stuff. And you know, there's young guys that can do it just as well too, for sure. Of course, it's not just the old guys. There's everyone that is session people in Nashville are just so amazingly good. You have to be to get work there.
What made you decide to put, we briefly touched on Johnny Cash, and I Still Miss Someone is an amazing cover and tribute to Johnny. Del Rio Dan from the Everly Brothers and Kern River from Merle Haggard. We touched on Merle a bit and we touched on Johnny a bit. What made you decide to add an Everly Brothers track to the record?
My brother gave Greg and I a tape of this sort of late 60s, early 70s Everly Brothers stuff that is a lot different than what most people think of when they think of the, you know, the earlier Everly Brothers, like their hits. It's just more country. It's got a little more swagger and just a little more loose. But all the session guys that are on it are just like the absolute best players of the time. Jesse Ed Davis, Ry Cooter, just the best guys. And they made a few records in that era, and those records were a huge influence on the Mother Hip sound. And Greg and I have just always tried to emulate the way that they sang and how they sing so far behind the beat, and it's just crazy. And we worked for many, many years to accomplish that, and so it's a big part of our sound for sure. And that song was just a song that was always really powerful to me, and day, I don't know, day of school, and I were just sitting around one night listening to records, and I was like, check this song out. And we heard it, and he was like, let's record it. And it's kind of it's a little bit of an outlier on the record, because like I remember when we finished playing it, Gene Chrisman comes in to the control room, and he's like, that ain't country.
Right. Right. But they didn't have a problem with the Johnny Cash or Merle Haggard tunes that are absolutely country, right?
They didn't have a problem with anything. No, those guys aren't necessarily country guys. They're, Chrisman is like almost more of like a R&B drummer. Like he's they can do that. They can do anything. They've played on everybody's records, not just country.
What is the plan for this record? I mean, it's not out for a bit. Is the plan to tour this record with a band, or is the plan just to let people know about this record and work it into solo performances when you can? What do you hope happens with Sort of Surviving?
Well, we're going to do some touring on the West Coast with a band for starters, see how that goes. And I mean, I can always go out and play solo. I really enjoy doing that, and it's easy, and it's easy to make it sound good because it's just one person and one voice and one guitar. And as long as you sit in the right room, do it in the right place, it's super easy to make it sound good. But it would be fun if we could take the band out and do some shows around the country. But you know, we'll see what the demand is like. I'm not going to go out and just play because I want to. It's got to be a response to people wanting you to do it. You know, I've done it enough so that I'm not going to just go do it.
And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that the Mother Hips continue to tour and continue to make rock and roll all over the United States. You guys are, you know, play a ton of dates in February and March and April. Is being a band as important to you as being able to, you know, do these one-off projects, either a solo record or a record with a band that's a Tim Blum record specifically? Is it all still really exciting for you?
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, not always. It's not like it's the biggest all the time. Of course not. It's traveling can be kind of a drag. But yeah, I love playing with Mother Hips, and that dynamic and the energy that we have together is just something that's unique, and I've never felt it playing with anyone else. And we have such a large body of past work that we can actively draw upon, and we have lots of wonderful hardcore fans that know as much about the music as we do at this point. So that's a really unique situation, and continues to be exciting to be part of that and to have been part of creating that band. But of course, I mean, the flip side of that is that I always want to be doing fresh stuff and new stuff and trying things I haven't done before. And so I wouldn't want to just do that, because that's a lot of time we spend playing songs that I wrote like 25 years ago, and that's cool, but that's not really where it's at for me as a songwriter. It's about like what I'm going to write later on today or tomorrow or something. That's really what gets me going creatively.
Is there talk at all about another Mother Hips record? Because, you know, it's been quite some time. It's been a year since Chorus came out, and, you know, you worked on that record for a year, so, or over a year probably.
We recorded it, and then we decided to record it again, so it took longer than it needed to. But that came out in June, so that's been 7 months away. And we are going, the Mother Hips are going to go back into a recording studio in September and record another record.
Thanks so much for Sort of Surviving and for all that you do, and for continuing to support the Sound Podcast when you drop by. We appreciate it, and continued
my
success.
Pleasure.
We really do appreciate it, and thanks so much for taking the time, man. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, Ira. Take care.
Tim is a fascinating guy, and Sort of Surviving is a great record, which we have spun quite a bit over the last few days here at the studio. We are very eager for you to hear the record and uncover some of the things we talked about with Tim. The album, though, isn't out until March 29th, but you should definitely refer to timbloom.com for tour dates, news, and some videos. Before we leave you, have a listen to Where I Parked My Mind, featuring Sarah Pisal, a friend of the Cash family, a song that will definitely give you a sense for Tim's sense of humor.
It all starts out innocently enough. A beer to wash my sandwich down when I break for lunch. But one or two turns into three or four before my jukebox song gets played. I can't find the door. I guess I really went and did it to myself this time, 'cause I can't remember where I parked my mind. Oh, I can't recall a thing at all I might have told you. Was I being funny, or did I insult you? There's no point in trying to deny I'm way over the line, 'cause I can't remember where I parked my mind. When Friday comes, my boss hands me my stack. I go to pick my good girl up and take her to the track. And we get there just in time to hear the bugler blow his horn. And Friday isn't Friday without Mr. Barleycorn. I guess I really went and did it to myself this time, 'cause I can't remember where I parked my mind. Oh, I can't remember where I parked my mind. I've tried to tell myself to quit time and time and time. There's no point in trying to deny I'm way over the line, 'cause I can't remember where I parked my mind. No, I can't remember where I parked my mind.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit osirispod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.